The case will be taken under advisement. And we will go on to the last case of the day, 042072, Jerry L. Dean versus Timothy DeRosa.
Morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court, my name is James Baker. I'm appearing this morning on behalf of Jerry Dean. The question presented in this appeal is whether Sergeant Dean was entitled to all the process he was entitled to under the Due Process Clause when he underwent a hearing to determine his fitness to return to active employment with the Illinois State Police before its Medical Review Board. The District Court, in granting summary judgment, answered that question in the affirmative, relying upon the Laudermill case. And as a general matter, the court said the plaintiff had an opportunity to appear, present relevant medical reports, and that's all he was entitled to. We take issue with the district court's conclusions for two separate reasons. Number one, we don't believe Sergeant Dean received all Laudermill said he was entitled to because he was not privy to all of the information presented to the board upon which it relied in reaching its decision. Secondly, Laudermill teaches that an individual is entitled to a limited hearing as a check against a mistaken decision, provided that that individual at a later point has an opportunity for a more elaborate post-deprivation decision. And I think it's unrefuted in this case that Sergeant Dean's only hearing was his five-minute appearance before the Medical Review Board. In analyzing whether Sergeant Dean received the process he was entitled, the Supreme Court's holding in Matthews v. Eldridge identifies three factors. And applying those factors to facts which I believe are largely undisputed, or at very worst for purposes of Sergeant Dean, presents material issues of fact, those factors would warrant a more elaborate hearing than what Sergeant Dean received. In the first place, I think it's undisputed that as a result of the board's decision, Sergeant Dean was effectively terminated from his employment with the Illinois State Police. After the board's hearing, he ran out of any capability of receiving income, medical benefits, and had no alternative other than to seek out retirement as a source of income. And that's spoken to in some depth in our brief. The second point, unlike the situation in Matthews v. Eldridge and the situation in this court's holding in Butita, the issues surrounding Sergeant Dean's fitness to return to employment did not involve narrow questions of medical fitness, which were easily resolved with reference to medical reports. And that best evidence of that is that the chairman of the board, in making his recommendation to the director of the Illinois State Police, stated in a memorandum that Sergeant Dean's case presented many complex issues for which there was no easy resolution. And we submit that one of the factors to be considered in determining the adequacy of due process is whether the hearing was adequate enough as a check and guard against mistaken decisions. And Sergeant Dean's case involved much more than the narrow question of what doctor said. In fact, if that's all there was to it, the evidence would have favored his return to employment because the two doctors who had seen him most recently both concluded he was fit to return to duty with the Illinois State Police.
So your argument is that the defendants were unreasonable in their reliance on the reports, I take it.
That's not our argument. Our argument is if if this was a simple case based upon medical reports of the type that occurred in Matthews v. Eldridge, then the medical reports confirmed that Sergeant Dean was capable of going back to work. We're not suggesting that the defendants were unreasonable and perhaps saying there are other factors we need to be considering. What we're saying is that if they're going to consider those factors, they should do it in a way that's fundamentally fair to Sergeant Dean by giving him a full and adequate hearing where those issues can be fully addressed, fully raised, competent evidence presented. And that can't occur in a 5-minute meeting where Sergeant Dean doesn't know about these issues. The third thing to consider the adequacy of due process is that two members of the board who also had supervisory positions of authority over either Sergeant Dean or his area of operation offered comments unfavorable to his return to the state police. These comments were made initially at a hearing Sergeant Dean was not even at in November of 2000, and then in a January 2001 hearing after Sergeant Dean left the room. And I have spoken to those in some depth in the brief. Sergeant Dean did not even know about these comments, let alone have an opportunity to respond to them. And they raised significant matters for which, in order to fully evaluate his fitness to return to work, should have been considered, and he should have had an opportunity to respond to. The next consideration is that this was the only hearing available to Sergeant Dean under the medical review process. Unlike the situation in Matthews v. Eldridge, where the disability claimant had an opportunity to a full-blown evidentiary hearing at a later point in time, and unlike the situation in the Butita case, which has been discussed in our briefs, Sergeant Dean had no opportunity at a later point in time to a full-blown evidentiary hearing. The most he had was an opportunity to request reconsideration from the director. I see that I am encroaching upon my rebuttal time, and with the court's permission, I'll conclude now and come back at a later date. Thank you.
May it please the court, Timothy McPike, Assistant Attorney General, on behalf of Timothy DeRosa, Dan Kett, Teresa Kettlecamp, George Murphy, James Fay, and Sam Nolan, Director of the Illinois State Police. Your Honor, this case involves what we believe to be a case that's almost on all fours with this court's decision in Butita. There's a similar statutory and regulatory scheme involving the removal of unfit officers from active duty. There's a similar procedure both under Butita and comparing Butita to the procedures of the Illinois State Police for an officer to show fitness for duty. And in this case, Mr. Dean was provided all those procedures.
But the main report presented at the hearing found Dean fit for duty. If the board was rejecting an expert's opinion, that seems to increase the risk of an erroneous determination. So how does the rejection of the expert's opinions square with Butita?
We must distinguish the expert's opinion about Mr. Dean's diagnosis, his current condition, and his prognosis, what his condition is likely to be upon return to active duty. We have to distinguish those, which are in the realm of the expert's expertise, he's a medical psychologist, versus a determination of given that that is Mr. Dean's condition, whether that is adequate, an adequate condition to constitute fitness. That is a decision that's more within the realm of the Illinois State Police. The Illinois State Police totally accepted Dr. Marsh's diagnosis of Mr. Dean's current condition, which is that his pseudo-delusional features were in remission, but they also accepted his prognosis that if Mr. Dean returned to active duty, there was a serious possibility that the stress of returning to active duty would cause his condition to recur. If his condition recurred, it would not be labile. In other words, he would not get sick again and then get well again. He was going to be permanently disabled at that point. So it was unlikely to be treatable. And third, Dr. Marsh said that if he is to return, his supervisors must monitor his psychological state for stressors. He must be receiving constant medical supervision and consulting. That was the ISP, the Medical Review Board, completely accepted that expert's opinion. What ISP, what the Medical Review Board said, is that's an unacceptable accommodation. We have state police officers. These state police officers are not psychologists. They are not competent
Couldn't the department simply have required him to submit to regular mental health evaluations at his own expense, and you know?
They could, but they held that to be, well, first of all, that is not what the expert suggested. The expert suggested he would have to be monitored by his supervisors on a day-to-day basis. No. Second of all, we have to remember that the only property right that the officer could conceivably have here is what the statute and the regulations provide. PER 38, the applicable regulation, says fitness for duty requires fitness for duty without restrictions. This was a significant restriction on and a significant requirement for monitoring that the Medical Review Board and the director held did not, in fact, constitute fitness. So the real issue here is not whether they were ignoring the medical expert's opinion. They were, in fact, accepting wholly his opinion. What they were disagreeing with was that medical condition, psychological condition of Mr. Dean constituted fitness. They disagreed that given the requirements of an Illinois State Police officer who has a badge and a gun, a person who may become stressed out and become pseudo-delusional does not constitute fitness.
What was the post-deprivation process available to Mr. Dean here in the nature of an appeal?
Mr. Dean has, it's actually a right of reconsideration because the director makes the final decision, and then that's the final administrative decision that he's not going to be reinstated. And then under PE 38, he has the right to come back and request reconsideration. Now, there's nothing in that regulation that denies him in this reconsideration. For instance, he could have brought additional medical evidence with him. He could have asked Dr. Bolin to give more than a 3-paragraph opinion. Dr. Bolin was of the opposite opinion, that Mr. Dean was fully fit and always had been.
And that reconsideration is back before the board, or?
No, it's just to the director.
To the director.
It's essentially, it would be like in the court, a motion to reconsider before the director. Now, we must remember that all Butita holds is that all the due process that a person seeking reinstatement to active duty is entitled to is just the opportunity to present the medical report. This case went, our case goes much beyond that. We give him a pre-deprivation informal hearing, which Butita does not require. We give him with the right to counsel. We give him a post-deprivation right for reconsideration. In Butita, they said there was nothing beyond the opportunity to present medical evidence. Butita then said, but even assuming there was a right to reinstatement, which there is not, Butita court said, there is not a right to a property interest in reinstatement. Even assuming there were a property interest in reinstatement, in Butita we've got beyond after deprivation, you've got a bald grievance and arbitration. Neither of those involve a full evidentiary hearing. A grievance under Butita, if you read Butita, was just essentially the same as the right to reconsideration here. I submit my grievance and I get an answer back. Then the union contract provided for arbitration. None of those procedures involve a full evidentiary hearing. And Butita doesn't hold that that's required. It only holds that if there had been more of a property interest, what was here would have solved that, would have met that. Here, PER 38, under the holding of Butita, went beyond the due process required. All Butita requires is the right to submit your medical reports. So we hold that, we suggest that, first of all, we rest on our briefs as to Mr. Dean's claim that there was a pretense here, that this was actually a misconduct hearing. We believe he's raised five facts which he claims shows that. We'll rest on our briefs to our response to that. I think, and we've attached as appendices are the minutes of the meetings, the medical review board meetings. They speak for themselves. We think no reasonable trier of fact could read those minutes and say that this was all a pretense. We were really trying to get him for the 1997 misconduct. He just hasn't made that showing. And there's one other issue I'd like to address briefly, which states that that we have perhaps waived our argument that he was not deprived of a property interest. I want to read to you that the trial court held that we conceded that the termination of Mr. Dean deprived him of a property interest. We specifically did not concede that he had been terminated. As a matter of law, he has not been terminated because he always had the right to seek reinstatement up until he retired. So he still had that property interest in his employment status, even though he had no pay. He was not terminated under the statute. And we specifically did not concede that, and that is in the record at, starting at page 18, our memorandum in support of summary judgment on page 9. There's a footnote where we state, for purposes of this motion only, defendants agree that plaintiff was deprived of a property interest. The facts clearly establish that plaintiff was never suspended, demoted, or terminated during the time period relevant to this action. In fact, plaintiff retired from the Illinois State Police in 2002. However, plaintiff did go without pay for certain periods of time when he was on dock status and prior to his retirement in 2002. So we specifically did not concede that he'd been terminated. However, the trial court held that essentially we had conceded that his termination deprived him of a property interest. We erred in our analysis below in saying that his loss of active duty pay deprived him of a property interest because he was never entitled to active duty status. That didn't deprive him of a property interest. However, this court should not hold us to that for the same reason. If you look at Butita, there was an error in the analysis by the parties below, and Butita said by the district court. Nevertheless, this court's duty is to analyze the law correctly. We believe the law, as we've set forth in our brief, is the proper analysis, and to hold us to that small amount, that limited waiver, would result in the court making a decision based on the wrong analysis. The second reason is, if I may, is that if you hold us to our waiver, we limited our waiver to the summary judgment motion. If it goes back, we won't be limited by that waiver, by that wrong analysis, and we'll just be hearing it again when it comes back on appeal. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. McPike. Okay, Mr. Baker. 2.5 minutes.
How much time do I have?
2.5.
All right, thank you. Mr. McPike relies upon Butita and suggests it's four square with this case, and I would suggest that it's not for three reasons. Number one, Butita involved a review of medical reports, papers. The questions were very narrow concerning whether the plaintiff in Butita suffered a liver ailment. In this case, we don't have that narrow question, as Deputy Director DeRosa conceded. And just giving you one example, Mr. McPike spoke to the fact that there would be an insurmountable or grave burden upon lay people in the state police monitoring Sergeant Dean's condition, and that his the Dr. Marsh's suggestions for an accommodation are unreasonable. This court hears accommodation cases all the time under the Americans with Disabilities Act, and knows that that's never a simple question. It raises a lot of factual inquiry. So there should have been some opportunity for Sergeant Dean to at least offer an explanation as to what the accommodations are that would be required, and to know that that was an issue in the board's mind. The second point is, and I have to make this abundantly clear, unlike the Butita plaintiff, Sergeant Dean had no right to have his grievance over not being reinstated submitted to binding arbitration. And as this court knows, binding arbitration is a decision made by a third party after hearing evidence on both sides of the proposition. And this court has held arbitration proceedings under a collective bargaining agreement can satisfy due process. We don't quibble with that issue. What we suggest is the plaintiff did not have that right. The final distinction between Butita in this case is we're mixing legal apples and oranges because the property interests are different. In the Butita situation, the question was whether the plaintiff was going to work or be on disability. And Judge Flom, in his Butita holding, interpreted the provision of the pension code upon which the plaintiff relied. And he said that there are multiple, or at least a two-part process in a disability determination, or a determination ending disability and returning an employee to work. In this case, that's not what we have. There's no question about disability. He was not entitled to disability. He wasn't eligible for it. His doctor had determined he wasn't disabled. And in this case, under Pier 38, there are a number of options available to the medical review board. They could give him another job. They could get further medical testing. He could resign. He could seek out disability, or it could terminate him. And that's what it did in this case. It terminated him. It removed him from active duty status. It would not allow him to secure secondary employment. It opposed his application for unemployment compensation. And if they wanted to do that, if they wanted to terminate his employment, then under Section 14 of the State Police Act, what it should have done through the director was to file charges seeking his termination, in which case he would have had a full-blown evidentiary hearing to determine whether his medical condition was cause for his removal from the state police. And that wasn't provided him. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you both. Thank you, Mr. Baker. Thank you, Mr. McPike, for well-argued case. And it will be taken under advisement, and this court will be in recess until tomorrow morning at 9:30.